Welcome to Transitions with Ruth Ann Rehm McCaffrey. I'm Santia. I'm here with Ruth Ann. Hi, Ruth Ann.
Hi, Santia. Nice to see you today.
Nice to see you, too. And we're coming to the end of the year where some of us are figuratively wrapping things up, and we're going to talk in a different sense of wrapping things up at the end of the year. What's been inspiring you about endings?
This month, I've been reading a wonderful book called Exit by Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, a professor at Harvard. And this actually, the subtitle to the book is Endings That Set You Free. And I'm really enjoying what she's saying about the whole experience of taking an ending with a tremendous impact and being able to look at that as a gift and a way to go through those endings, powerful endings, difficult endings, with a knowing that at the other end of it is going to be a real transition that will give us a whole different kind of life experience, which, of course, is a theme that runs through all of the work that I do.
Oh, it does. Yeah. And we can be talking about some minor transitions or pretty big transitions. And this one we're focusing on more of that, the big impact that you're really feeling, that sense of either loss or betrayal or a level of unfairness or maybe even questioning why something happened the way it happened.
And in our work today, I don't want to minimize the fact that lots of times the transitions will take, and they do, they take their own time. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I want people to know that something good can come into our lives even through an ending that has such a powerful impact on us.
And Rob has a good example. We were talking about this at our prep work for this podcast. And Rob, are you willing to share your story as far as how you felt with your big impact transition?
Well yeah, thanks for having me on, you guys. And as some of our listeners know, not only do I engineer, but play music. And this is an anecdote from years past, maybe about 10, 12 years ago. I was in a band and we had a gig and we had a pretty packed house. A lot of people came to see us, and as we were setting up, a confrontation ensued between two of the other band members, and it became heated and alarmingly so and embarrassingly so. And I remember kind of like as the confrontation in a public setting got worse and worse, I kind of wanted to become really, really teeny and small and could just shrink into the shadows because it was embarrassing. And then, of course, it got bad enough that the gig did not happen that night, and it was canceled because of this confrontation. Then you put all your gear away, and you're kind of like, there's a sad, hollow feeling. But upon leaving the premises and getting back onto the highway at night and driving, I began to feel like uplifting sense of happiness and peace. And it was strange because of the bad confrontation that had just happened. And I felt this like complete sense of rightness and peace that maybe this is a good time for things to end with this particular project.
Yeah. And that's a key, isn't that?
To
this process is really that listening to yourself and having that sense of relief.
That's right. That's the relief, the feeling of relief is the signal that whatever is ending needed to end, and now you're going to be free to think about and pursue and create something that is going forward in your life without that.
And so thanks, Rob, because that's something I think that if we don't pay attention to that, we may then just skip over and assign that relief to the relief of the event, that just the event was over, not looking at it in a much bigger sense that this really means the end of something. This was the end of that particular group continuing.
Right.
So I think that's so being in tune with that sense.
That really is. That's the, if we're going to look at ways to respond to something like that opportunity, that relief is signaling oh, I need to really step back here and see what the relief is telling me.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like, Rob, it was telling you that not only am I glad to be out of this the evening, but I maybe don't want to be with this band because whatever goes on with them or whatever dynamics produce that big altercation, hey, that's not consistent with the creative person that I am, and mm-hmm. I don't want to be around. I don't want to build my life around something that's so negative or has the potential to be so negative.
And I think my tendency, and Rob and I, we've talked about this, that our tendency is to try to fix things.
Right.
So when we have been in those types of situations, oftentimes we then try to see how we can repair and fix.
Right.
And sometimes it's not a matter of doing that.
Well, and so what we can know is that what you were describing was a big signal.
Mm-hmm.
It was saying this being away from this experience is exactly what I need to be. But sometimes it doesn't happen the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes multiple times before we really get it, or before we're willing to trade the fear mm-hmm. of leaving behind something that is so bad for the fear of the unknown. Well, if I leave that band behind, what does it mean? Am I going to have to go, you know, build a whole new band and with people that I don't know, and maybe I will never be able to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if fear is driving us, then it's much harder to liberate ourselves and move forward in a way that's productive.
Especially if you have that sense of losing something.
That's right.
So fear of leaving a job for something else.
Right.
Or a relationship.
Right. Yeah.
And thinking, well, then maybe I'll have nothing, and having something is better than nothing.
Right. Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot does talk about one very powerful example in her book that about this mother, Iranian family, actually, with two children, a boy and a girl. And the little boy was sensitive and very bright, but not a fighter, not a macho kind of a little boy. And this is after 9/11, because this is a current book. And their family had moved into a neighborhood that was predominantly high socioeconomic, low incidence of ethnicity. So
mm-hmm.
they were one of the few families, and certainly the only Iranian family in this community. And the little boy in school, the little girl did okay, because she was in school very outgoing and somehow was able to fit in. But the little boy became the object of bullying.
Mm.
And it went on and got worse and worse and worse. And the parents, particularly the mother, kept trying everything they could, working with the schools, taking him out of that school, putting him in another school. Ultimately, she talked to the children herself and the other children who were bullying him, and got just harassed by the bullying children's parents. And it got so bad. She kept trying to fix it, and it got so bad that she finally gave up and said, "We're pulling him out of school.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to homeschool him." And everything, I mean, he became himself again, happy and creative, the little boy. I mean, there certainly will forever be some scars from, because it was years of bullying that he
oh.
endured. And but the relief that she felt finally when she said, "I've had it. I'm just not going to try to fix it anymore," that liberated her and them and the family, and they figured out a way to create a whole different experience for this little boy that honored him
mm-hmm.
and did not make him flawed or wrong or bad like the bullying
mm-hmm.
kids were doing, so that he could be himself and move forward being the wonderful creative person that he's meant to be. So that was a just a pivotal example when
mm-hmm.
I read that Because in my practice, I work with kids who are bullied sometimes. Mm-hmm. I don't see very many young people, but once in a while. And for some of these people, it's the most creative, most interesting people who stand out and are different in the crowd, and they get tormented. Mm-hmm. So that's why that example came to really impacted me. So I think when that family began to see this, finally, the saying, we're done, we're not going to try to go along that path anymore, that was the freedom to then be courageous and start exploring other options.
And so I'm curious, what did they do with the daughter? Did she stay?
She stayed in school.
She stayed in school.
She stayed
and
in
then
school.
He, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's great. They gave him another, a different
yeah.
option, because fear really does make you a very different
well,
person.
Well, and he was really, he was exhibiting all kinds of emotional behaviors in school and had really gone away from himself. And it was just, it just broke my heart to hear it. So, they started facing the new future with mm-hmm. courage, and their point of view was to start to accept that the way that they were hoping things would go, that he would find a community in this school and be able to develop and be who he is, that point of view changed, mm-hmm. and then they began building a new way to achieve what they wanted, which was the education of their son.
Okay.
And so what we do is we stay with, we face forward with courage. I keep saying that, but it does take courage to move away from those little voices of fear that keep mm-hmm. cropping up.
It or definitely
can,
does.
Right.
Can have a huge power over,
yeah.
over someone.
And then to look for, okay, what is the very first step that I can take? And sometimes when I'm working with clients, I'll start asking them about, well, what's the very first step that you can take to move in a new direction? And the example I use is, think about turning the steering wheel on your car.
Mm-hmm.
If you turn the steering wheel just a tiny bit, it doesn't have to take 180-degree turn. In fact, that would probably throw you off the road.
Yes.
Turn it just a little bit, and down the road, you're going to be in a significantly different place.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives people the confidence to say, oh, well, I can move a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're thinking about, I use an example of myself. I got, the last time I went in to see for my physical, I got a pink note from the doctor.
Oh, no.
That said, your cholesterol is a little too high. And I thought, oh gosh, you know, what can I do? So I started thinking about, all right, I can sign up for an exercise class that maybe I'll do.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine suggested a gym where you do climbing, because I've tried the Y, mm-hmm. I've tried jumping on the trampoline, I've tried all those things. So anyway, I went into that gym to look around, and I got really excited. It felt like fun in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I can clip onto one of the, because my husband said, oh no, are you going to fall? And I said, I'll clip onto one of those lines or cords or whatever those things are called.
A little belay.
Yeah,
that they...
belay thing. And it'll hold me. And if, when I, you know, do something, it'll let me down softly.
Mm-hmm.
So I can climb with courage. It was pretty tall though. The clear up to the top was pretty tall. So that was my first step. We went over and I bought 10 passes. I got a deal on them, bought 10 pass. And that's one thing I mm-hmm. can do. We'll see. And
so
I'm trying some other things.
And I love how you walk us through steps. That I really, I'm a task person.
You're a step
I guess.
Person.
I am.
Yeah.
I really am. So I think the first step was paying attention.
Yes, pay attention. Take it seriously. This, like Rob, the feeling of euphoria, and the mother in the story in the book, the mm-hmm. feeling of relief. Pay attention to that. That's a signal. A second step is adopt the point of view that this is a gift of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And third, face forward with courage. again, know that if you're looking ahead with anticipation, that this can be, this will be a whole new adventure going forward. It's going to be good. It's going to be challenging, probably, but it's going to be interesting, and the results will be, will have a chance to give a much better quality of life than where I've been. Four, look at the first step that you can take. So step number one, of course, is not, I mean, you won't stop there, but take take an opportunity right there to say, what's step one? What, and then do something. Do the step. And then what does that naturally lead to? Take that step. And it's really, sometimes clients will come to my office and they'll be sitting in my office and I'll say, how did you get here? And when we're talking about that, and they say, well, usually I drove. Sometimes people say I took the bus. And I say, well, when you got to the out of your car or out of the bus, how did you get here? And not trying to be flip or, you know, disrespectful. And they'll say, well, I walked across the parking lot. And I'll say, how many steps did you take? Well, I don't know, 30 steps, 20 steps, something like that. And I said, that's the point, is that you don't have to do this in just one long step. You're not going to get from here to the whole new beginning in one big, giant jump. You're going to take one step and then one and then one. And then the last step on here is to reward the effort. And people say, what do you mean reward the effort? Our culture rewards results. And I coach people to reward the effort. So you got out of your car and you took the challenge to walk across the parking lot and up the steps and into my office. Okay, what nice thing can you do for yourself because you did that? And people will say, oh my goodness, what nice thing. And so then we go through a fun brainstorming to figure out some nice things that people can do for themselves. Because sometimes people are, particularly people who are very generous about giving to others, will say, oh my gosh. And so, well, what nice things can be a reward for you? How about a latte? How about 5 minutes to just sit and enjoy the sunset? Or how about talking on the phone with a good friend? How about letting yourself rest for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or half an hour? How about taking a warm bath? How about M&Ms? I've discovered that there's those, they're like Reese's peanut butter M&Ms. They are so good.
Oh, those are really good. I like the mint ones too.
I love M&Ms. So anyway, so, but I say, you know, not everything can be chocolate.
Yes.
Anyway, but that's not, that is a legitimate reward. And so come up with a list. One of my really fun rewards that I used to do when we had a fireplace, now we have a gas fireplace, when we had a fireplace that burned wood, is that I would build a fire. And there was something so satisfying about building a fire in that fireplace and then sitting and feeling the warmth and then putting new wood on. And anyway, so that was the kind of a one that surprised me. And I don't know how many other people do that, but
I can completely see that because you're warming yourself and you're warming a space. You're taking care of yourself. I can understand that.
Cooking something good, making something. I made the other day steel cut oatmeal. Oat for you, steel cut. It took 30 minutes to
make.
It
does take a long time. You can do that in a crock pot over the evening.
Oh.
So you can actually set it all up in the evening
and
have
it on.
Yeah. And then you'll have wonderful oatmeal the next morning.
Oh, I love that idea. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Because Jim said the next morning, how about some steel cut oats? I said, oh, I don't think I want that. 30 minutes. So I can do it in the crock pot.
Yeah, in the crock pot.
Thank you.
Yes, I love it because it's,
it's really tasty.
As long as your crock pot isn't a massively, it doesn't heat things up really fast.
No,
as long as it's
a
really
low
slow one.
Yeah. Or warm. Could I leave it on all night?
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to do that tonight because this end of our year in the Northwest has been very chilly.
It has.
And so that would be a wonderful way to start the next day. Yes, good deal. So those are my steps right now that come to mind for facing these big impact endings. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, knowing that sometimes the biggest piece of going through the experience, it's like an iceberg. It's happened before we get to the final launching into mm-hmm. the new, letting ourselves be liberated into the new. And so just, I mean, because of the mother in that story in Sarah's book, went through years of really trying to figure out what to do before she finally was launched into, we're done. Mm-hmm. We're going to do this a whole new way.
And I think we oftentimes are resistant to that change. And yeah. then when we have such a big impact, oftentimes, at least personally, I felt that sometimes it's countering that big impact with something else as big, equally big.
Right.
Rather than really slowing down and listening and taking smaller steps.
Right. Because sometimes the next big thing hasn't made itself known yet. Mm-hmm. And we won't know necessarily what it is until we stop. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm guessing, yes, there are people who go from one torturous ending right into a new beginning that they know is right. A new job, for example, mm-hmm. Get fired from the old one in a particularly disgraceful way, and something new and wonderful opens up immediately. But in my experience, that isn't the everyday situation with people.
That's right.
Often it takes some pretty thoughtful in between time to be open to the new experience mm-hmm. when it comes, and to be able to put the thinking time and the receiving time of the gift and the inserting what we need to do on our end into the experience before it can fully be ours mm-hmm. and we can own it and live it and enjoy it.
I love that.
Yeah. So happy ending.
Yes.
Big happy year ending. We're ready to have I have the feeling we're going to have just a fabulous new year.
I do too. Mm-hmm. I really do.
Lots of good things are going to happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. This is Santia. For more information about Ruth Ann, please go to her website at careermi.com. This program is produced and engineered by Rob Rigoni at Brown Pelican Productions. For more information about Rob, go to robrigoni.com.